Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're planning on betting the NFL playoffs, buckle up. Betting football's hard enough as it is. We're doing the research for you, so listen to Cash the Ticket with Mike Valeni and I. We'll be dropping new episodes for every single playoff game. And that's going to be storylines leading into it, so some good football stuff, but also the betting nuggets you're looking for. Sides, totals, trends, player props, throw those in there too. Pre-game and post-game, we're going to be all over the postseason. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Let's keep our attention with the Dallas Cowboys as we are live at Buffalo Wild Wings in Bedford off of Airport Freeway. If you want to come and see us right now, let's talk with our Dallas Cowboys insider, Mickey Spagnola. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Now, what is the latest that you think on the injury front? Because I know Diggs, Lamb, Lewis limited again, but the practice schedule, obviously there was a walkthrough in there. How are we feeling about those three's potential to play on Sunday?
I think they play on Sunday. I think short week, and they're just being very careful with those three. It sounded like they got out of the game, you know, in decent shape.
Yeah.
I think the guy that's got to play through something is CeeDee Lamb.
Okay.
That shoulder, you know, needs some rest. From what I understand, it doesn't look like it needs surgery. But he will know that he has it. And I think we saw the expression on his face. It might have been in the first quarter of that game when he caught a pass and went down. And TV came flashing up on his face. And you can see he was in pain. So, you know, God bless him. He's trying to play through it. So we'll see where that one goes. And speaking of, you know, injuries, Zach Martin did have his surgery yesterday on his ankle. And how about, and you guys might have heard this, but I heard it earlier in the week. DeMarvian Overshown, he's from ARP, Texas. The ARP ISD today is celebrating DeMarvian Overshown Day at the schools.
Oh, wow.
And they had put out a notice that for all the students in whatever class you're in or level and staff to wear DeMarvian Overshown jersey, T-shirt, any kind of Cowboys apparel to show support for their, as they put, ARP Tiger, who they knew was going to have to go through an extensive surgery at some point after his injury. So, you know, only small town Texas does stuff like that happen.
Yeah, and that feels like something that could definitely, like, whether it's for a day, a week, or whatever, like, really pick up his mood.
Yeah, and, you know, and he's usually upbeat. You know, and I was told when they were helping him off the field, the first thing he was telling Britt Brown was, how soon can I get back? And you're going to have to really push me to get there. Hadn't even got in the locker room, and he was already thinking going forward. So it just kind of shows you, I think, the profound effect he's had on so many people in just his short time with the Cowboys, not only with his play, but the type of person he is. And for an entire, and I know it's a small town, right? I don't know if there's 1,000 people that live in ARP, Texas. But for a community like that to show support for one of their own, I thought was pretty neat deal.
Yeah, absolutely. How is Cooper Beebe doing right now?
It doesn't look, it didn't sound optimistic that he would get out of concussion protocol in time, especially since it's a short week. So, you know, how he was doing before the concussion, I think he was, you know, for a rookie switching positions that he had never played in college, I think he was playing very well. And I think, you know, there's a great future there for him going forward. But as for this week, I think that's one of the, well, maybe last minute you'll see, but he hadn't practiced yet. So, unfortunate. So when you mention injuries, well, okay, now your backup guard is your backup center, and your backup to the backup guard is now your starter at right guard because the starter is recovering from surgery. And it sure sounded like when Mike McCarthy kept talking about Tyler Guyton about, you know, one of the things that, you know, in the NFL you have to be available. It didn't sound like he was very optimistic that he was going to be available for Sunday. So that means, you know, Awesome Richards on IR, Chuma Adoga probably has to start again. And that means three-fifths of your offensive line on Sunday are backups.
And I realize, like, there's a long way to go in the career of Tyler Guyton. But just in a vacuum, this season, whether it's because of his struggles on the field or his injuries, this season has been a disappointment for him, has it not?
Well, I mean, but let's remember, we're talking the 29th pick in the draft. So it wasn't like he was a top 10 pick. And he was the last offensive tackle taken in the draft until late in the second round. So I don't know if the Cowboys pushed the envelope on him, taking him even in the first round. But, you know, he hasn't played that much football. That's the thing about him. You know, he only started 10 of 14 games, I think, at Oklahoma. You know, and he wasn't a lifelong offensive tackle. So he needs to play, and he needs to, I think, if I'm reading between the lines, at some point kind of fight through injuries or nicks and bruises, right? Fight through a hurt if it's not an injury. And I think that's something you have to learn the more you play in this league.
And that sounds like, based on what Jerry said weekly, it sounds like a lot of these guys are having to learn to battle through some of this stuff because there are a lot of young players that they're going to be relying on for the future here.
Yeah.
Mickey, the Bryce Young, what's he been doing better since he's gotten back at the helm for
just Carolina? Listening to everybody describe how he's playing and everything, it sounds like he's doing a better job of not taking off and running at the first sign of danger. He's trying to extend the play with his legs and still throw the ball instead of just taking off. And I think I don't know if he has better support now than he was, well, probably certainly better than what they had last year. But he seems to be keeping his eyes downfield more and extending the play and still throwing the ball. And, you know, everybody wants, well, now he's too small for the NFL. Well, he played in college, and there were big guys in college that end up in the NFL, and he played well. I think their running game with Chuba Hubbard is supporting him much better than the running game did last year or maybe early in the season. So, I always say this, you know, the quarterback's not out there playing singles. You got to have help, and I think he's gotten a little bit more help. And over these last five games, so they win two, they lose to Kansas City by three. Should have won against Philly if Leggett doesn't drop the ball. And I forgot the three-point loss to the Bucks. Another team in first place in the division was overtime.
Yeah.
So that is why I think they're going into this game as 2.5, 3-point favorites.
Now, something that I've really come up with, something really revolutionary here, Mick, so prepare to have your socks blown off.
Okay, hang on. All right.
Cooper Rush is 1-4 as a starter when he turns the ball over, and yet he is 6-0 when he does not turn the ball over. So
if
you see him today and want to just drop a note to
drop
him,
a note.
Like, yeah, if you don't turn the ball over, the Cowboys are going to win. Mm-hmm. I really feel like we might have found something here.
Well, I want you to go back and look at those games and see what the opponents scored in those games.
Oh, okay, I gotcha.
Because
probably more than 17 points.
Last when he went 4-1, yeah, no one scored more than 17.
Yeah.
And the one was Philadelphia, 26, I think it was. And now this one was 27. And what were the two games that he lost this year? How much did the Cowboys give up?
A lot.
Let's see.
I'm trying to think.
Did he start? Did he start? He started Philadelphia and Houston. Is that right?
Yeah.
So
both
34.
Of them scored 34.
Yeah.
Gross.
So I think that might have something to do with that record also.
I'm going with the turnovers, Kevin. I'm going to stick with that.
I told you we're revolutionizing the game right before our eyes.
Mickey, just wanted to add another layer to that.
I'm not here for nuance and context, yeah. Mickey, all right? Just take my blanket statement as fact.
Yeah, it's not an onion, all right? Yeah. It's just one layer. It's all we
Well,
need
wait.
Here.
Somebody threw this at him yesterday, telling him the Cowboys were 3-0 playing on a short week.
Yes.
And
They've
he
been
was like,
very good on a short week.
He goes, okay, I'll take that.
Yeah, but accept
he,
it.
See? I don't know if he even he made it look like, are you kidding me? Do you think I was aware of that? 3-0 on a short week.
No, now he is. Mickey, have you ever had Vienna sausages in your life?
Oh, my God.
Because Mike and Kevin have never had a Vienna sausage, and Atolo brought up a can for each one
come
of them.
Them little things, right, that come
mm-hmm.
in a can?
Yep,
I think I've. I mean, I don't think I've made a meal out of them, but I'm sure I've run across them at a party, like finger food or something.
Mm-hmm. Like a not very good party? Or
yeah, it's one of those parties where you're just like, okay, we're let's go Doritos
yeah,
instead.
Yeah, and they have Dr. Thunder there and stuff. Yeah, I get what you're saying.
Do you think they should try it, though, Mickey, because, you know, you should try things in life.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Kevin, you still look skeptical.
There's so many things that it says goes into this one little sausage. Chicken, beef, mm-hmm. pork.
Everything.
Like, yeah. Added chicken broth.
What does it all sound like?
What's a hot dog.
It sounds like a hot dog without
no,
a,
what's
without
the other canned food that
spam.
Comes? Spam, right?
Yes.
You know, way back I judged a spam cooking contest.
You're kidding me.
I'm going to need you to tell us everything about that.
And we had to taste everything, right? And it was like, okay, just like that. And I think later on I got spammed, I believe.
Amazing.
Too much information.
No, that was not too much information. That was the perfect amount of information. How we feeling about this game on Sunday? You brought up the Panthers are favored for the first time in a couple of years. What's going to happen?
I think the Cowboys will need that 2.5 points to win. How about that?
Okay.
I'll take that. I'll take the Cowboys if you're giving me points, too, by the way.
Yeah. They haven't been putting a ton of points up. You know, if the Cowboys can score like 21, I don't know if that's asking too much. You know, I think they have a chance to...
against this defense, it is not asking too much.
Win the game, right?
Yeah, for sure.
You know, I saw an interesting thing in the Charlotte Observer. They did a story pointing out that since 2010, the... Panthers have drafted or acquired 13 wide receivers, and the only one still there is Leggett.
And he's not good.
They haven't given up on him just because he dropped that pass. He's young.
I know.
And the reason they did it was because Mingo was one of the 13, and he's not there still.
Yeah, we really got a steal with that trade, didn't we, Mike?
Well, hang on.
Okay.
Let it play out. I'll be patient. Yeah.
Thank you very much, good sir. We'll catch up with you again on Monday.
All right, boys. Have a good weekend.
There you go. Mickey Spagnola. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Now, you talked about this on the other side. Is Major League Baseball trying to embarrass Aaron Judge?
Yes, probably so. I think they're trolling the crap out of him right now. They are auctioning off the Aaron Judge drop ball, and they're also auctioning off the point ball for Gerrit Cole.
It's through the Dodgers, though.
Oh, okay. All right, I gotcha.
So hold on, the Dodgers are auctioning off this ball? This makes it even better after they won the World Series.
Is that legitimately the insult to injury?
Yes, it is.
The Aaron Judge ball, I didn't look up the Gerrit Cole ball. The Aaron Judge ball is over. It's already been
auctioned off. Oh, it's already done?
Off. What's your guess how much that ball went for?
$38,000.
Yeah, because it's the initial bid.
$43,500.
Wow.
Jeez. I know I said that really horrible.
I got it.
$43,500.
Yeah. Wow.
Jeez. Or 43,500.
That's what I was thinking. That's fine.
Do you think a Yankees fan bought that and they're going to be like, I got the ball. I got the one that you dropped.
They can explode it like the Cubs did. Or was it the Cubs or the Red Sox? I think it's the Cubs, right?
Yeah.
They exploded the baseball to end the curse.
That's the way to do it. I love that. Yeah,
so I'm assuming the Garrett Cole ball, I just didn't look it up, is already sold too.
Yeah. I don't know the number on that. But I just think that's a hilarious. Now that I know that it was through the Dodgers, I think it's even funnier.
That's way too much money.
For that ball?
Like Aaron Judge's, what did Aaron Judge's 62nd home run ball go for, which set an American League record, and you could look at it as the overall record? If you wanted to, you could definitely look at it because Bonds, McGuire, Sosa, a little bit different story to their 60-plus home runs. That ball did it get up to 300,000? Maybe?
So. I need to go back and check that.
That ball has to be 100 times more valuable.
Yeah, for sure. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. We're live at Buffalo Wild Wings in Bedford. We're shifting some stuff around because we got Nate Evaldi ready for 11:40 and Jake Berger at 12:40. So coming up next, it's time for Gridiron Gravy. Do you view this head coach as elite? Let's do it next right here on The Fan.
Now it's Josh Allen standing in. Let one rip going deep. Shaquille hangs on down to the one. There's another highlight.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. We're live at Buffalo Wild Wings in Bedford. We're going to do Gridiron in just one second, but I have a procedural question because our waitresses have been great, but we're on air most of the time. Do you think if I just make an order over the air that they would put it in the kitchen and bring it over?
Yeah, go ahead and throw your order out and see if what happens.
They're very busy.
Yes. There's a lot of people that are here.
If you feel like cooking up an extra 10-piece boneless mild, please, that would be outstanding. But right now, let's go around the entire NFL and dip into some gridiron gravy.
Dip!
Gridiron Gravy, of course, brought to you by Rhino Shield. Why paint your house when you can shield your home? Visit rhinoshieldtx.com. Do you guys think of Sean McDermott as an elite coach? Because if he wins this weekend, I know, obviously, huge game for the Bills, but if he wins this weekend, he would be the fifth coach ever with five straight 11-win seasons. The other coaches, Bill Belichick, Tony Dungy, Andy Reid, and Tom Landry.
Could have been Mike McCarthy.
Could have been, but we fell short. Oh, thank you very much. But it's that he made it to the AFC Championship game in 2020, obviously, and then they've lost in the divisional round three straight times. Is that what keeps people from viewing Sean McDermott or Josh Allen or whoever the hell you want to throw in that group from being elite? Because they're like, you're elite in the regular season, but there's the elite of the elite who's there to squash your playoff dreams.
Yeah, I mean, Mike McCarthy's been a very good coach over his career, and he has a Super Bowl, but there's no way we consider him an elite coach.
True.
So McDermott, what he's done, he's one of the great coaches, one of the really great coaches that has been to a high level. But it's never gone over that certain place. And he needs to get that. He definitely does. I think he's a really good coach, man. The idea, the vision for what he wants his team to look like, the fact that they were able to get Josh Allen and be able to do what they've done with him, I think he's a very good coach, but no way do I consider him elite.
I wonder if there is now you have to go to Super Bowl era. I even wonder if there's a coach in the Hall of Fame who, Marv Levy, I guess, just came to mind as I was saying. Is he the only one in the history of football that coached in the Super Bowl era that actually made the Hall of Fame as a coach that didn't win a Super Bowl? I bet he's the only
one. Is Marty Schottenheimer in the Super Bowl? In the Hall of Fame?
I don't know.
I'll have to look.
But, I mean,
because that's who I think of.
Yeah, I just think that to be considered like a Hall of Fame great coach, and then, you know, you have to accomplish something that nobody else accomplished, and that was go to a Super Bowl 4 years in a row.
Yep.
Now, he didn't win any of them.
True.
But, like, to go to a Super Bowl 4 years in a row.
Okay, so it is interesting. Like, coaches and quarterbacks, it's kind of the winning or Super Bowl metric.
Yeah. He's not in the Hall of Fame.
Okay, well, there you go then.
He has a UFL championship, though.
I do not count that the same.
He was an NFL Coach of the Year in 2004.
Yeah.
He's in the Chiefs Hall of Fame.
Okay.
So, in your face.
Do you think never mind. This is a question for another day. Do you ever think you'll get to a point with Hall of Fames where you're like, we got too many people out in there, and we'll sort of start bumping some people out? They're like, hey, we got to make room for Andy Reid. Not just the Chiefs Hall of Fame, just Hall of Fames
in
general.
Are you considering that they have only a certain allotment of room?
I'm assuming we have some sort of finite space for this Hall of Fame.
I like this conversation. Here's where it's interesting. If you're the Chiefs, you've probably put in a lot of players. I remember going to a Phoenix Suns game, and I'm like, Walter Davis?
Because like, they're like, we're never going to be good.
Right. And then what if you get great? What if you're the Chiefs? I do feel like Tex Schramm, and early on, but I'll just take it to Tex Schramm, he didn't want to put Drew Pearson in there. He didn't want to put certain players in there that were borderline Hall of Famers. He's like, our organization has been so great.
Yeah.
We've been to 5 Super Bowls. We've won 2. We're in every NFC championship game. We win 10 games every year. If I just start putting in Danny White's, and I'm not trying to put Danny White was a good quarterback.
I got you.
But now all of a sudden you've been, I hate, not bad. Bad is too strong of a term. But you've been an average organization for such a long time. Now we start saying, should Zeke go in the Ring of Honor? Like, there used to be a status to the Ring of Honor for the Dallas Cowboys that was like, even if you're a borderline Hall of Famer, the answer is no. Now we're like, well, we've been average for 30 years now. What about Tony Romo? And you're like, wait a second. There was a standard that the Cowboys had. There's a standard that the Yankees have. There's certain standards. But what happens if you had a standard because you were so spectacular for 30-plus years, and then for the next 30 years you're average?
Yeah, that's a good question.
And then what's the opposite is if you're the Chiefs and you've been a little bit of a nothing franchise for such a long time, and now you've won 3 Super Bowls or New England Patriots, and you go, you know those guys we put in the 70s and 80s because we needed to put somebody in? Like, they don't really have the resume that now the guys that are getting in for our organization have.
I'm in on this conversation. Yeah. I don't know if we pick it up at another point. If people have specific folks in their crosshairs, they're like, that guy.
Like, to How put this that? Guy in, yeah. we take this guy out. Like, it was tough for Paul Pierce, for example, to get into the number retire Boston Celtics thing. If he played for the Phoenix Suns, it would have been like 3 days after he retired. And nothing against the Phoenix Suns. They're a solid organization. But you get what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
There's certain organizations where like, no, our standard is way different than the Arizona Cardinals.
Now, Corey, I'm going to ask you if this is the saddest quote you're going to hear all day.
All right.
This is from Caleb Williams. Quote, this is my first time being part of something like this, of losing and this streak going. So I ask questions to the guys that might have lost a bunch of games in a row like this or had losing seasons. I ask them questions because the more knowledge that I have prepares me for the future if this ever comes close to something like this again.
Ooh.
That is so sad. He's like, hey, I had lots of people there who I could ask about us not winning just in case it happens again.
Yeah, and you hope it never does happen again, but you can't.
Either way,
you can't
what
depict
do I care?
He does actually have a lot of the control over that, though.
That's like, true.
Not necessarily the voice that has the control, but the ability to play themselves out of it. That is sad. That is a very sad quote. But I do wonder for the ones that it always goes well. They never lost. How quickly it like breaks them when they finally do lose. Like the experience of losing and getting over it, moving past it, not dwelling in it too long, and then like going out and succeeding. One of the things I always loved about baseball, you do your thing, and if you're bad that day, you have the next day you can go out there in the pros, obviously, not in high school or college, but you can go back out there pretty quickly and turn it all around. When you're a loser constantly, do you have just a different mindset about it? That is sad.
I just thought that was such a depressing quote. Now, Mike McDaniel's come out and he was asked about the Odell Beckham Jr. release, and he goes, it was best for both parties.
Yeah.
I have to admit, I kind of forgot that Odell Beckham was still doing his thing.
Had no clue.
I saw him get a catch the other day in a game.
Okay.
And I was like, oh.
He's doing stuff.
Who was that? Was my first thought. And then I was like, oh, it's Beckham. That is one of the most explosive offenses out there. And they're like, we're moving on from a guy who's not as explosive enough to keep up with what we do anymore.
We've talked about, whether it's Tyler Guyton or whoever else you want to throw out there, some of the struggles of the Cowboys rookies. Let's throw this out there for the Eagles. Quinyon Mitchell.
Mm-hmm.
Since week 4, he hasn't allowed more than 3 catches or more than 30 yards on throws into his coverage since week four. That's amazing.
Yeah. He's...
Like 3 for 30. If one of your receivers has that, you're like, oh. But he hasn't, like, he has not given up
to any receivers.
Past that. He's been amazing this year.
Is he the best?
The best cornerback, like, overall.
I mean, if that, I mean, those stats would
that's
say
incredible.
He is.
In the last 2 months, I think I would argue he might be.
I'm looking, Kevin.
Who is he taking it from?
Taking what from?
Ramsey? Like who would?
Oh, I got what you're saying.
You understand what I'm saying? Like, if he is the best now, if you're like, we're changing the ranking to he's the best. Who was the best, or who is his main competition?
It's kind of crazy because there's like a group of five. That I think
Sertan,
you could,
yeah, was in the mix
he's probably the one.
Yeah.
Like I think I would make him the one. But Kevin, I'm looking at my notes on Quinyon Mitchell.
Tell me,
love his size and build, stout with speed, not a burner, but stays close enough to make plays. Good hands, knows when to make smart plays. Would like to see more of his tackling and discipline, but coverage wise, he's phenomenal. So he's lived up to what I thought he would be. I thought he would be a very good cornerback in the league.
Now this is a weird stat to me because it doesn't necessarily have anything to do with, like, who actually won the game. But the Chiefs are 0-7 in their last seven games against the spread. No team has ever gone on to win the Super Bowl the same season it had a six-game losing streak against the spread. But also, Hollywood Brown, they're opening up his practice window today. So 21 days until he comes back. I just wanted to throw out that factoid because I'm like, I guess. But, like, I just think it's because the Chiefs have been so good. They're always favored by, like, maybe a little bit more than they should be.
For sure.
And then Patrick Mahomes is like, we'll win. I don't know what it's going to look like yet, but don't worry about it. We'll win the game.
Yeah, that's how they go about their business. Having Hollywood Brown back, I don't know that that's going to be much of a huge difference maker for their offense at some point. I really don't. I just don't think he's that much of a difference maker, honestly.
Hopkins has made a difference. It would be interesting when you do look at their if he comes back, let's say for the end of the season and then for the playoffs, and you had Travis Kelce, obviously veteran tight end who's been in all the big games along with Patrick Mahomes, and then you had Hopkins, Brown, and Worthy as your three main receivers. Like, that does sound great on paper. I'm still surprised to this day on paper that they don't score more. But we talked about it earlier. Their offensive line isn't very good. And then I think they play to the style of their team. I think Andy Reid
totally
says, we are playing a defensive style of football because that's the strength of our team.
This is going to sound like a weird comparison, and I apologize if you hate this comparison. The Kansas City Chiefs are like a bad guy wrestler who's the champion, where they always make you think that you're going to do it this time. You're going to win the belt. But then at the end of it, you're like, I don't know what happened. We lost. I'm not entirely sure how it happened, but we lost.
Is that what the bad guy in wrestling does?
So that used to be the thing with Ric Flair, is he would go around all the places, and he would make you think. He'd like just be whipping his ass, and you're like, our hometown guy's going to do it. And then he wouldn't, and you're like, the crap happened.
And then he'd talk all that crap to you while he was beating
you. What about Kerry Von Erich at Texas Stadium?
That's right. He did. And then Kerry Von Erich had some reliability problems and had to give the belt essentially right back. But that's true. That did happen.
Did I just get a burger?
Yes.
I don't know. I don't. That might not be my burger.
But
I want a burger,
kinda want
but
it.
I haven't ordered it.
All right, well, I mean, you should go ahead and take
I'll have,
it if you
yeah,
want.
Yeah, I'll get one of that.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here.
That's funny.
We're making orders here today, Kevin.
I believe this is live coverage of Corey saying, I want the exact thing that you've brought to me, but not the thing that you just brought to me.
Well, this might be somebody else's burger,
okay,
Kevin.
That's fair. Coming up next, we're live at Buffalo Wild Wings in Bedford off of Airport Freeway. Coming up next, let's talk with Nate the Great. Nathan Evaldi will be on with us next right here on The Fan. KNC Masterpiece back here on 105.3 The Fan. We're live at Buffalo Wild Wings in Bedford. And right now, we bring to you the man we are all so excited re-signed with the Texas Rangers. It is Nathan Evaldi. Good morning, sir.
Hey, good morning. Good morning.
I hope you could hear all that applause for you.
I can, yes, I can. Thank y'all.
So, I know we got a lot of baseball stuff to get to, but I have to ask another question first. Back in the day, You had originally signed or committed to Texas A&M. Were you in on this Texas A&M Texas football game about a week or so ago?
I was not. I had unfortunately declined their offer after I had previously committed to them, and then I had declined it. And I told them that I would take my luck with the draft, and I was able to, get drafted by the Dodgers.
Seems like it turned out all right.
You clearly made the right decision. Did Texas A&M do anything bad? Because we've heard some scary recruiting stories about sometimes A&M's kind of intense.
Yeah, it was pretty intense. Ultimately it just came down to, me wanting to end up playing with the or trying to take my luck in the draft. My first Tommy John I was a junior in high school. So I didn't want to take that opportunity to possibly get hurt again playing in college. My dream was to play in the big leagues, and I wanted to take that opportunity and, run with it, and try my luck in the draft. And it, like y'all said, it all worked out.
Evo, I know you just talked about your injury you had in high school, and I know we're going back in the day, and we'll talk about now here pretty soon. But did you play any other sports? Were you a basketball player or a football player in Alvin?
So growing up in Alvin, I had fallen off a horse when I was 9 years old, and I had a really bad concussion. So my dad was like, "You're not playing football," and I never put on the pads, so I didn't know anything that what I'd be missing or anything like that. So, growing up, I played some basketball, but once I got to high school, being in Texas, it's like you can play baseball 24/7. Our high school coach was pretty adamant about us only playing baseball, and that was my best sport at the time, so that's what I did.
Pitchers are all about the fundamentals, and I know you were only 9, but did you fall off the horse because you weren't doing the right fundamental things to stay on that horse?
Yeah, I guess there was a neighbor's dog, and he came running across the yard and spooked the horse, and the horse went up, and I let go of the reins. So, yeah, I let go. I should have held on a little tighter.
I'm sorry, I laughed.
No,
is it okay to laugh
don't
now?
Laugh.
I'm sorry.
He's okay.
I'm sorry.
You're good.
Do you ride horses now, or are you, done with horses since 9 years old?
No, I've been done for the most part.
I'm with him because I'm definitely allergic to horses, so that's why I can't be on horses. So me and Evaldi are together on the sideline. I like it.
There
okay
we go.
With that. Now, you have seen, here in Texas, you've seen the World Series, and you've seen not the best season. What was it that you said, I have to be back for this club?
I'm sorry, could you say that again?
What was it that it made you say, I have to be back with this club, with this organization?
Again, we were able to come over there in 23. I saw the guys that we had, and we were able to win a World Series, and I don't feel like much has changed from that. I know last year we didn't play well, and we didn't play up to our standards, but I feel like that was just, I feel like we all kind of struggled at the same time, right? We were never able to get back on page. This year coming back, see why I spoke about the vision that he has for the team and what it's going to take for us to win, and we've got ownership backing him, and I feel like we're going to be back to where we were in 23, and we're going to be surprising a lot of people again. I feel like our division's up for grabs. I feel like we've got a great opportunity to go out there and win a lot of games. So that was very intriguing for me to come back. And, you got DeGrom healthy, ready to go, and you got Tyler Mahle, who's going to be back, and you got Rocker and Leiter. I talk about benefits from a losing season, right? You're going to have young guys who come up who, they get to perform, and they may not have had, that opportunity if we were winning a bunch of ball games. But, obviously they're going to help us. They're going to help, and they're going to contribute down the road, and, they're going to be ready for it this time around.
So I know you watch bullpens of your teammates, and I remember mm-hmm. being in spring training with the Phillies and watching Billy Wagner, and I thought to myself, how does any human being ever touch a baseball off of Billy Wagner? You just mentioned Jacob DeGrom. When you watch guys throw bullpens, is he the most impressive guy that you watch standing behind and watch his stuff?
I would say so. We have all the data and everything in the TrackMan, and you get the strike zones right there. He doesn't throw any pitches down the middle. He locates everything at the bottom of the zone. In his bullpens, it's crisp, it's clean. He works on his changeup that he doesn't throw as much, and it's nasty. He throws some curveballs that he doesn't throw in the games, and they're nasty. And then you see the slider and the fastball, but it's not only are all of his pitches electric, but he locates them. And, it starts in the bullpen, and it's really fun to watch because, he'll throw a pitch, and he's big on it. He'll be, oh, terrible, oh, the worst. And it's, 95 on the black, just not – at the bottom corner on the black. It's just on the black middle away, and it's fun to watch. It's nice to be able to give them a hard time about the little things like that too.
So, Evo, I know your teammates love you and call you a leader of the pitching staff, and you watch those bullpens. Can you explain to the Ranger fans here, why do you watch those bullpens, and how do you try to lead from, yes, the example of being the pitcher on the mound, but also from watching pens and talking to your guys?
You want to be able to help somebody else during the game, right? But if you're not watching what they're working on in the bullpen, it's hard to help them out during the games as well. And, I feel like everybody's a little different when we work in the bullpen and then we transition to the game, on the game mound. I feel like, we all go out there and we compete a little differently, but when we're in the bullpen, you're trying to work on your craft and, they might say something that benefits me and then they might be trying to do something that I can help them out in the bullpen or try to simplify something down. You know, we talk about, pitch sequencing and, ways to use pitches, I don't know. There's so many different things. I feel like sometimes, you go out there and you have a game plan of how you're going to attack a hitter, but then the hitter is going to show you something different, right? Or you can help set up different pitches. And it's just fun to talk ball and in the bullpen, in the dugout during the game when we're not pitching. We want to make sure that we're watching the game. And, if we see something, you got all the pitching coaches, Mike Maddox and, Bobby Wilson and everybody, they're all watching the games and, they're not missing a beat. And, it's another set of eyes. You might see something that nobody else sees, and if you're able to help out, then it's going to help us win ball games, and that's what it comes down to at the end of the day.
It sounds like the answer is yes, but do you feel like you get that same, palpable fan excitement when you see some of the younger guys, like Rocker or Leiter? I know you were already talking about DeGrom, and you see them in those bullpens, and you're like, oh, holy cow, they really can help our team. Because when you describe it, you sound like you're just sitting in the stands like us.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you're watching and everything, it's, again, being able to fortunately be around so many different pitchers and arms and stuff. Like, we have some of the elite of the elite. Like, there's no other DeGrom, there's no other Rocker or Leiter out there in the game right now. So it's like it comes down to being able to bottle up your craft and, locate and throw strikes. And I think that's one of the things DeGrom's done extremely well, and that's one of the things, that Rocker and Leiter are still working on. And, knowing that they have to change up their pitches and their sequencing and things like that the first time, second time, hopefully the third time through the lineup, I think that's one of the things that, that's definitely one of the things that was intriguing and, encouraging me to come back. I knew what we had and I knew the guys that were, on the roster and who's coming up and things like that. So I know that we have arms available and I know that we have what it takes to win.
Evo, you've played for different managers along the way, and Bruce Bochy's one of the best. What does Bruce Bochy maybe do different than all the other managers you've had?
I think he stays the same all the time. And, obviously he'll get frustrated if we're not playing well. And, he's not afraid to tell the guys. There's a lot of funny stories, I feel like. I can't think of any right now on the spot, but there's those moments where the stuff that comes out of his mouth is pure gold, and he keeps the guys relaxed. He knows what it takes to win. He believes in the staff and the guys that we have, and I feel like he knows when one of the biggest things is when to take a guy out of the game and leave him in, and he does that really well.
So you got a new teammate yesterday too in Jake Berger. We're going to talk to him later. Have you faced Jake Berger, and what do you know about him?
I'm sure I faced him. I don't remember the results. I'm really bad about this stuff, like recalling what happened during the games and who my first strikeout was in the big league. Sometimes I forget. I don't know. I feel like sometimes I've got to be able to turn the page when I'm out there pitching, right? I know sometimes I can attack guys one way or another, and you kind of keep doing the same. I don't want to do the same thing, right? So I make sure that I'm prepared before I go into a start, knowing how to get the guy out. But no, I don't know much about him. I know that he hits a lot of homers, so I'm looking forward to watching that and cheering for him from the dugout.
Let's say when you're facing the Seattle Mariners in April and then you face them again in June, have you kind of forgotten how you got those guys out in April or what they did successfully against you?
I mean, sometimes we have to face them back to back. And I mean, I'll, you know, I do my homework. You know, I take a ton of notes, and I'll do them all over again 5 days later, because maybe they find that, maybe they find something in their swing, maybe they find something different in the series when we face them. You know, they may have, you know, they may be hot, they may be cold. So I got my notes I can go back to and look at, but for the most part, I like to watch the swings, read the swings, and, you know, try to make sure that I'm mixing up all my pitches. Another time too, you know, I've got five pitches, so I might have one pitch working really well, you know, that day for me, and I'm relying on it a lot more than another one. So I think that's one of the things that's helped me out in my career, is having, you know, five different pitches and using them all differently too.
With that many pitches, how often do you have a warm-up of your bullpen or whatever, and you're like, well, that pitch is not going to be on the table today. Like, it's just not working the way I need it to.
Yeah, so, you know, when I was younger, I would believe that, right? Like, if there was one pitch that wasn't working, I'm like, I'm not using that during the game. And, you know, I find myself down from five pitches down to two, right? But I feel like, you know, that's one of the things I try to tell a lot of the young guys, is there's always going to be an opportunity to throw a pitch. There's going to be a safe count, like, where you can, you know, I do it with my curveball a lot, I feel like, where I'm just going to throw it right down the middle. And nobody's waiting to hit that pitch, right? You're trying to hit a fastball or, you know, the splitter, cutter, something like that, something that's coming in a lot firmer. And when that slow pitch comes in, it just, you know, it kind of freezes the pitcher or the hitter, but it also resets everything too, right? So it's like kind of gets me back on track and back in the counts. And, you know, maybe, you know, at the beginning of the game, I didn't have the pitch working, but hopefully by the fourth or fifth inning, I've got it working now.
Last question, did you write a list of what you wanted for Christmas to Santa?
Oh.
And what's on the list?
I'm really bad with Santa. I haven't been asking Santa for a lot lately.
Another World Series.
That's it, right? I mean, if I had to pick one, that'd be the biggest one right there, is another World Series title.
See, I thought for sure you were going to say, I wish for a 3-year, $75 million deal. Like, that's,
he delivered early.
Yeah, that's what I would have guessed.
Well, right.
Nate, thank you so much. And really, everybody here, you heard the fans when we started. They're all pumped. I'm a lifelong Metroplex person. I'm pumped you're back. So thank you very much for the time, and so glad you're here to stay.
Thank you, guys. I'm looking forward to seeing you all out there on the field in 2025.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen. You hear the cheers for Nathan Eovaldi. Now, Mike, I know I'm going to regret this. Let me ask you something. We got Jake Berger coming up in the normal Mike likes it slot.
Yeah.
If I were inclined to move some things around and still provide a space for Mike likes it, would you be excited about such things?
I mean, the people.
It sounds
like they need to take a load off here at Buffalo Wild Wings. And I'm here to provide it.
Oh, my gosh.
Coming up next.
Oh, God, is it me already?
No. Coming up next, NFL overreaction or reality. We'll do that live from Buffalo Wild Wings in Bedford on 105.3 The Fan.